This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, and thanks for staying with me, Chuang, Xiaoning, and Philip C. Now, in about 30 minutes, we'll talk to the data scientist, Dr. Lau Chiu Han, on Microsoft's investment into Malaysia. But in the meantime, let's talk about historical preservation.
Now, that's one question that cities all over the world have to grapple with as it grows. How can it embrace modernity while honouring its history? That's not a new question to us in KL, but it's the one that's resurfaced again over and over as concerns over 122-year-old convent Bukit Nanas may be at stake.
Now, the school sits on prime government land and its lease is set to expire in September, which has not been renewed, prompting many to fear that the school may be forced to relocate. But according to the Federal Territories Land and Mines Office, the non-rural renewal will enable the land to revert to the government so that the convent will be a fully aided government school. In other words, it's not being marked for development and will not be demolished. Regardless, this morning we're taking a look at how well Malaysia has managed the tug of war between development and preservation.
So for more insights into this, joining us on the line this morning is Elizabeth Cardosa, the heritage conservation expert, formerly the president of Badan Warisan Malaysia. Good morning, Elizabeth. Now, what determines the value of a site and whether it should be preserved? Does a site like Convent Bukit Nanas meet all the prerequisites?
Well, you know, the value of the site, I suppose it depends on whose heritage it is, if you're looking at it from that basis of historical preservation. In the case of Convent Bukit Nanas, obviously its long history is one thing. The fact that it's an educational institution that has brought, you know, that had thousands and thousands of people have gone through, including national leaders, international personalities. If you look at it from the perspective of the National Heritage Act, it meets a lot of the criteria, you know, as from its education, scientific, architectural, aesthetic, its social history, and it certainly, you know, bears a lot of that. So yes, it does meet what would be considered in Malaysia as a heritage site.
So then my question is, as you say, rich in heritage, Malaysia does have a National Heritage Act, which affords some protections to these sites. How well is this enforced then?
Well, how well is it enforced? That's an interesting question. I think it isn't a question of how well is it. The Act itself under Section 24, and, you know, states that it has a register. You can place, the Commission of Heritage can put or can nominate and identify properties to be put on a National Heritage Register. And the register, according to the Act again, you know, gives it a certain, not just status, but a level of protection against new development imperatives, let's say, and some of the stresses that might come along with that. If it's a government-owned, if it's a public-owned piece of property, it's probably easier for the government, you know, and for the National Heritage Department to list a building. But when it's privately owned, you have to go through the process of getting the owner to agree to the nomination and the listing. And in some cases, even if the Act again says the minister can decide, the minister of, you know, whoever's responsible in this case, culture and tourism, can decide if a building is worthy, they can still not just nominate, but designate and list. However, there are sensitivities, and I think that the practice has been to try to get agreement as opposed to force it upon any party. So that is a challenge. And I think the other challenge really is not there being a very good understanding of what benefits would come along with a site being listed. You know, it's not clear. The Act doesn't actually clearly specify it. Owners, private owners, don't necessarily know, you know, am I entitled to grants, you know. So it's very often, I think, and has been in the last, you know, 10, 15 years since the Act has been in play, greeted with a certain amount occasionally of suspicion, maybe, that especially if it's a privately owned property, you know, am I going to lose control over it? What can or cannot I do with it? That's not clear. And so, I think that's the challenge.
So, Elizabeth, should the Act be actually redefined or be more clearer in terms of the protection afforded and maybe the benefits to private landowners in particular, so they know that this is in their interest as well?
Yeah, I think it not so much the Act, you know. I mean, the Act itself is reasonably clear. Very often, you know, along with the Act, you know, a whole series of other things come in to play. And this, certainly, it would be very helpful and beneficial for all parties to be very clear about, you know, if you get gazetted, this is what you can do and this is what you cannot do. And these are the parameters within which you know, should operate. A lot of people, including, I will tell you, some government agencies, you know, believe wrongly that if a building or a property is gazetted, that it precludes all manner of development. That's not true. It does not do that, you know. It limits the type of development that can go on, depending on whether a site is gazetted as a national heritage under the Act Section 24, or national heritage with a big N, Warisan Kebangsaan, under Section 67 of the Act. So you know that you know it's like, you know, are you the you know the gold star, or are you the gold double star? You know, that kind of thing, and that's not clear to a lot of people.
Yeah, Elizabeth,
definitely yes. Well, a lot more can be done.
In the broader interest of preserving Malaysia's history, which is obviously very important given our heritage, what did you make of, for example, examples like in Penang, where the history, the storied Upland School on St. Joseph's Novitiate on Gurney Drive was actually turned into the frontage for a mall? I mean, some people are quite mixed on that particular development.
I think that that predated the National Heritage Act. So, you know, the decision and the development of the development order that was given predated the National Heritage Act. So, generally speaking, from a high standpoint of heritage conservation, the retaining a property is good, but retaining it in its either continued use or a complementary use is what would be exemplar. And retaining it within a context where it's not necessarily swallowed up or, you know, by a group of the new development, which maybe eclipses it. Let me just say, you know, like your grandmother, you know, do you treat your grandmother by putting her in the rear side of a property? Even if you kind of put her in the middle, but you kind of ignore her, you know? I mean, you know, we talk about ourselves having Asian values. These are kinds of the things that from a heritage perspective, we look at. So it's good that the novitiate was
absolutely
retained, that building was retained. The context within which it stands is kind of a bit clipped, shall we say.
Understood.
So, you know, there are issues there.
Right, Elizabeth, well, thank you so much for your time. And, you know, obviously your thoughts are very valuable. That was Elizabeth Cardosa, the heritage conservation expert and former president of Badan Warisan Malaysia. Look, I mean, this is something very, very important because Malaysia is replete with such historical sites. And, you know, I just want to again point out, for example, in Singapore and in Penang, which is a heritage area, UNESCO, right? Very valuable, very big draw in terms of attracting the tourist dollar. Where they can be repurposed and modernized in terms of application, where it's no longer a school maybe, but it becomes something else. I think Singapore has done a very good example.
Well, Singapore has done a good job, but in the past they also knocked down significant parts of the old part of the city in the 1980s as part of the redevelopment. Now, the question, of course, is that delicate balance, right, between preserving your heritage and not also stopping the progress in terms of the city growing.
I think we have to distinguish between its utility of the heritage versus the superficial facade part. Because I think for us, and I think what you were saying in Penang, is that people tend to focus a lot on the facade, but not think about the use and intangible element of that heritage part. So particularly to Convent Bukit Nanas, it has a lot more intangible value than perhaps the physical structure that we talk about. And that's, I think, the hard part to quantify.
Yeah, you know, like, for example, I just want to stay in Penang again, right?
Yes, we know it's the center of the universe.
It is, actually. Convent Light Street is facing the same dilemma now, okay? It's no longer going to be used as a school. Right next door to them is a whole bunch of condominiums and apartments, very high level, okay? Very, very expensive. What happens then? I think this is something that our listeners can weigh in on, so tell us what you think. But in the meantime, 729, we'll come back after this, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.